The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, with John Mueller. Mondays and Wednesdays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
South of the border, down Mexico way, that's where I fell in
love. Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the one-of-a-kind show that tells you what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. It's a fact that millions of Europeans and North Americans have already made that big move south of the border. You might know someone who already has. Maybe it's your dream to do it someday. Well, it's a big move, and it's not to be taken lightly. And that's just what this show is all about. So let's get started. But first, for all of you out there who want to contact me, I have a new email address. TheExpatFiles@gmail.com. That's TheExpatFiles@gmail.com. Okay, now let's get started.
South of the border, Mexico way.
Okay, let's push on with some more interesting emails, somewhat related to building and or buying a house. In one email, Rodney asks, what about the sewage systems in Latin America, especially in regards to building and buying a house? Aha, sewage systems, he says. Well, just take a drive anywhere in Latin America until you come up upon a body of water, whether it's a lake or a river. And that's your sewage system. But before I really get down on the way Latins handle their sewage, I just want to say that when I was a little kid living in Chicago, it was a known fact that at least one of the Great Lakes was completely dead, and you were strictly advised not to eat any fish out of the others. And along with that, there were actually some rivers, especially on the east coast of the United States, where if you tossed a match in, they'd burn like a torch. Now, admittedly, the first world has come a long, long way in fighting that kind of pollution. And if you know your history, you'll find that the reason wasn't because first world people became more benevolent or caring about nature. Nope. It was because people and companies that polluted got fined, and they got fined heavily. And if any of you out there are old enough to remember the Love Canal incident back in 1976 up in New York, where it was determined that Hooker Chemical Company dumped thousands of tons of toxic chemical waste over a 50-year period into a residential area. And then they discovered that in the town, cancer rates and birth defects were shown to be at the highest rates of any other section of the United States. And in the end, the Hooker Chemical Company ended up paying $200 million or so, partly for the residents and partly for a state cleanup fund. And that was the trigger for the U.S. government's federal program, the EPA's Superfund, which has since gone on to clean up hundreds of toxic waste sites throughout the United States. Now, up in the first world, as soon as someone discovers there's a toxic waste problem, the first thing that happens is a bunch of lawyers jump on the bandwagon, and there's a class action lawsuit that drags on for years and ends up costing some company millions or billions of dollars, along with a tremendous amount of bad publicity. And in the end, the lawyers always end up making more than the plaintiffs. And I guess that's one way to deal with it, just like in the Aaron Brockovich story. But in the third world, the way they deal with polluters is a little bit different. In the vast majority of cases, no one does anything at all. And even if the contamination is so bad that the local mothers are having two-headed babies, the offending company usually just picks up and leaves, that is, if paying off government officials doesn't work. And it's true, Latin American countries have their own version of the Environmental Protection Agency, with nice new buildings and large staffs and computers and all. And they have their own thick books filled with first world style environmental rules and regs. But every expat I know will tell you, it's the biggest joke on the planet. In fact, one friend of mine who works for the United Nations, he told me off the record that he'd spent the day in one of these Latin Environmental Protection Agency offices, and it didn't take him long to realize that every single person who worked there was either connected to a high-ranking politician or related. And in fact, the whole place was a revolving door of political favors and nepotism. But don't get me wrong, you really shouldn't look at Latin America like the world's biggest unregulated waste dump. Those honors belong to the former Soviet Union and China. And compared to those guys, Latin America doesn't even come close. But that said, suffice it to say that if you're driving through Latin America and you happen to see a dump truck or a tanker dumping some unknown material into an already horribly polluted river or stream or lake, well, don't bother to take his license plates down and try to report him, unless you get some satisfaction out of beating your head against a brick wall. because in the vast majority of cases, nobody does anything at all. You remember Aaron Brockovich, don't you? Well, something like that could never happen down here. That is, of course, unless the wife of a high-level politician happened to have that two-headed baby. Then heads would roll. Hey, did I just make a pun? Well, anyway, well, as far as garbage, sewage, and toxic spills in Latin America goes, you'd be perfectly justified to say it's just like the first world was about 50 years ago. In other words, practically every single company violates standard environmental protocols that they use in the first world. And why shouldn't they? Especially if no one's putting the pressure on them to follow the rules. It takes money to clean up that toxic arsenic runoff from your gold mine. And for a hell of a lot less, you could pay off a few politicians. So what would you do? Especially if your primary allegiance was to the stockholders and not the environment. And don't let anybody kid you. These government workers, they're all on the take. You've heard the saying, everybody's got his price. Well, in Latin America, not only does every politician and government worker have his price, bribes down here are what you might call a necessary adjunct to your regular salary. Yet every single Latin American country has their equivalent of the Environmental Protection Agency. And they all have nice, big, new government buildings and large staffs and nice fleets of cars with great green-sounding logos stenciled on the side. And they put a lot of money into publicity, television ads, and billboards. Only they sit on their dead asses in their plush offices and do nothing. And where does that money come from? Well, would it surprise you if I said that a huge amount of it comes courtesy of first world organizations and governments? You know what I'm talking about. It's that feel-good notion mixed with guilt that well-to-do first worlders always have, especially after they've seen a documentary on CNN or the Nature Channel depicting all those shoeless poor people rooting around in garbage dumps down in the third world. You'd be surprised how stuff like that opens a first world money trough. But the problem is, and I've said this before, first worlders send that money down with practically no oversight. But as long as those first world donors feel good about it, they can sleep good at night thinking they've done their fair share for those unfortunate enough to be born in a third world. And the thing is, if you happen to take a walk into one of these third world versions of an environmental protection agency, you'll see a lot of paperwork being pushed around. But every expat that's ever looked into it will tell you it's nothing but a big show and a way to propagandize the idea that something is actually being done. And if you look in the Latin papers, every once in a while, you'll see that there's a photo op along with a press conference being held at one of these buildings. And that happens every time a first world country decides to make a big donation. And though a first world donation like that might make most tree huggers up north burst with pride, most expats I know just can't help but laugh like a bunch of cynics. I mean, these nonprofit organizations up north and government agencies, they really need a reality check. It just makes expats laugh when they see one of these photo ops, whether on television or in the paper, where some foreign official, like the Dutch ambassador, is handing over a big check to one of these department heads. Because we all know it's money in the sewer. And to give you a little taste of just how ironic this is, let's take Guatemala, for example. Well, not so long ago, I was driving along in Guatemala City, and the traffic was moving slow, and I stopped in a bottleneck. And I looked to the right, and what do you think was right in front of me? Guatemala's own Environmental Protection Agency, a very nicely appointed 8-story building with 8 or 10 late-model SUVs parked out in front with a few clueless-looking bodyguards standing around. Now, since I was stuck there for 3 or 4 minutes just sitting idling in the car, I couldn't help but notice that right in front of the entrance gate to the building, I mean, this was the Environmental Protection Agency building, mind you. Well, there was a concrete drainage ditch running the length of the property, and it was so filled with trash, bottles, cans, newspapers, and refuse that runoff water wasn't able to flow directly through, blocked by all the garbage. So in effect, there's a miniature, permanent, stinking, stagnant pond overflowing with filth every time it rains, right in front of Guatemala's equivalent of the Environmental Protection Agency. Now, you think anybody would take a shovel and go out there for 20 minutes and unblock it? If not, just to get rid of the putrid stink. Well, obviously, a polluted ditch right in front of the Environmental Protection Agency building is not much of a priority. Now, here's another case in point. The third largest tourist destination in Guatemala is called Lake Atitlan, It's considered in many of the travel magazines to be the most beautiful lake in the world. And that's not just local propaganda. In fact, over the years, a lot of very famous people have admired it so much that they've built second houses there. And it's not unusual to run into a very famous person dressed down, camouflaged, and in low-profile mode. I've seen a few celebrities myself when wandering around one of the dozen or so small towns that ring the lake. And in one very cool small town called Panachel, I've seen more than a few. I've had expat friends tell me that they've shared a beer down in Panachel with the likes of Harrison Ford, Mel Gibson, and Sylvester Stallone. Though I'll take Selma Hayek over those guys any day. Anyway, that'll give you a little idea of the international attraction of this place, and that's with practically no decent publicity or marketing. In fact, the classic writer Aldous Huxley said some 75 years ago that Lake Atitlan was way too much of a good thing, and that before he'd seen it, he thought Lake Como in Italy was the most beautiful lake in the world, but he changed his mind when he saw Lake Atitlan. So why am I saying all this? Because as of about 1 year ago, Lake Atitlan was pronounced by first world environmentalists to be technically dead. And it's not enough that the people that live around that lake are advised never to eat any fish out of it. And the people living in the 19 little towns around the lake, mostly poor indigenous people, that news doesn't mean anything to them. They haven't stopped eating the fish or anything else they can get out of that lake because that's how they survive. And here's what happened. About a year ago, all of a sudden, a red-colored algae bloom appeared all over the lake. And when first world environmental groups were called in to analyze it, they found a toxic cyanobacteria was taking over the lake. And the bad news was that it was crowding out and killing off everything else. And this toxic red bacteria was living off the drainage, the sewage coming from 19 little towns around the lake. And even though these towns of mostly poor indigenous people have been dumping their raw sewage directly into the lake for hundreds of years, last year it finally reached a tipping point. And who dropped the ball here? The so-called Guatemalan Environmental Protection Agency, maybe? And how could a country with the so-called most beautiful lake in the world and their third biggest tourist attraction, how could they let it all fall into the dumpster like that? Well, listen to this. Of the 19 little municipalities ringing the lake, only 8 of them treat their liquid sewage. And worse yet, only 3 of the 19 process their solid garbage before throwing it back into the lake. And you should realize this is not a big lake. It's only about 12 miles long by 5 miles wide. And even though the people around the lake have been warned not to fish or even bathe or swim in it, last time I was there, I saw at least 100 indigenous ladies doing their laundry in the lake. And close by, their kids were splashing and having a good old time in the water. So much for government warnings. And lately, since the bad news has been all over the internet, tourism at Lake Atitlan is down 50%. And when I spoke to someone in Guatemala's tourism board office, he told me that there was nothing but turf wars going on in his own tourism office. And it was even worse in their environmental protection office. He said that in both of these agencies, for the last 5 or 10 years, department heads and high-level bureaucrats get fired and replaced about every 6 months. Mostly for getting caught with their hand in the till, or letting out contracts to friends and relatives. He said they have major internal problems, basically because all the big jobs there are achieved through nepotism or political appointments, and the jobs are filled with people without any qualifications. And it's just a revolving door of cronyism. So naturally, there's an atmosphere of indifference, there's no coordination, there's political interests and duplication of work, and nobody's really got a plan or a strategy. It's all about going to work, collecting a nice salary, and getting promoted to a high enough position to get a company car out of it. So in the case of Lake Atitlan, it takes first world foreigners to come in and try to do something about it. So right now, if you go down to Lake Atitlan and you take a walk around the lake, you'll see all kinds of little cleanup efforts going on. And you'll see that some hotels and resorts are building their own individual treatment plants. It's about time, isn't it? It's 2011. But one thing you'll notice, almost all the real work that's going on down there now is being funded by first world organizations or private individuals. So I hope that gives you an idea how really terribly corrupt and inefficient these Latin governments are. And that's why I say anytime you read about some big first world donation to a Latin government, for whatever reason, to improve the police force or the judicial system or the infrastructure or the health system or the environment, Well, it's common knowledge down here that 80% of it's never going to get where it's supposed to go. I mean, look what happened in Haiti. All those billions of dollars in aid and almost zero results. In fact, if you happen to remember Hurricane Mitch, which was in 1998, like 12 years ago, well, that was one that hit Central America really hard. And so naturally, they received billions of dollars in aid from the First World. And guess what? Some 12 years later, there are still some small towns along the Atlantic coast in Central America that were promised a share of the aid by local politicians. And 12 years later, still nothing. Everybody knows that a promise from a politician down here is about as valid as a promise from a crackhead. Well, it always shocks me how every 4 years, people get so wound up in elections and actually go out to vote. I mean, vote for what? But anyway, I was talking about the death of Lake Atitlan, now wasn't I? Well, if there's any good news in that story, besides the fact that expats and First World organizations are taking over and trying to clean it up, well, we'll see how that goes. But now, since tourism is down 50% at the lake, and it's still one of the most beautiful lakes in the world, well, a golden opportunity for tourists and expats has opened up. In fact, one of the travel agents down here told me, the hotels and resorts are frantic. Occupancy is down so low that they're offering rock-bottom deals like $15 and $20 a night hotel rooms right on the lake. And though I wouldn't be looking for any land or property around there, real estate has taken a huge hit too, as you could well imagine. So it seems like everybody's a pessimist down there. And I know I did get a little off the track there, since the original email I got was about garbage and sewage treatment in Latin America. So I'll get back to that right now. So what you might have imagined, most cities in Latin America probably don't have sewage treatment plants. And if a city happens to be on a lake or a river, most of that runoff is going to go directly into the water untreated. Now, if that's what you're thinking, you'd be right. And pretty much all throughout Latin America, the only real high-tech sewage treatment plants you'll find are ones that have been donated from a First World government deep pocket or privately funded sewage treatment plant facilities set up to handle the waste from a big hotel or international airport or a big construction project financed by foreigners. Because these days, many times when a big developer comes into a country and wants to build a huge project, as part of that project, they propose to build a sewage treatment plant to handle all the runoff. And that's because most big developers are transnational, and they always build to First World standards, even when they do a project in the Third World. Which means throughout Latin America, there are some good First World examples of the way to do things. So what happens to expats when they build a house down here? You'll find that 95% of the time, the sewage from your house will be hooked up to a septic system. That is, somewhere on your property, there'll be an individual waste treatment area. Basically, a septic tank, which is called a fosa séptica in Spanish. But it won't be a metal or plastic tank like the kind they might use in rural settings up in the First World. The fosa sépticas down in the Third World here are actually cement and concrete block boxes about 10 feet long by 4 feet wide by 4 feet deep. Then the whole thing is covered with dirt so it blends in with the rest of the landscape. And the size I mentioned is about average for a single family house. Now, if you live in a residential tower, the sewage systems for all the units will be diverted into pretty much the same thing, only on a much bigger scale. And the thing is, if you know anything about septic systems, they're really just a collection point for organic waste. And some of the solids get biodegraded by bacteria, and smaller tubes divert the overflow liquid that eventually drains off into the soil somewhere below ground. And everybody who's got a septic system knows, every once in a while, they need to be pumped out by a specialist. And for a family of four, it usually works out to about every 2 or 3 years. And in Latin America, the cost to get it pumped is about $50 to $75, which won't break the bank. But the problem is, like everything else in Latin America, that's known as routine maintenance. And like I said before, the word maintenance is pretty much a foreign word when it comes to Latins. It's like we expats say, down here, there's nothing routine about maintenance. And because almost all the Latins I know operate in crisis mode, that means the only time they get their septic tank pumped is when they wake up one morning to find their whole living room is a toilet. And believe me, you don't want to be there when that happens. And one important thing concerning sewers and drainage pipes when you're building a house. Make sure you advise your contractor and architect to use pipe sizes and diameters that conform to First World specs. In other words, they have to follow the architectural plans exactly. Because one of the common things that contractors do down here to save money is to downsize the diameter of plumbing pipes and tubes and use a cheaper, thinner-walled pipe than what's called for on the architectural drawings. In other words, if a drainage pipe calls for a 4-inch diameter tube, they'll often downsize it to a 3 or a 2.5-inch diameter tube and not say a word about it. And you see that all the time, especially if they're missing an elbow or a T or a union. Instead of sending someone out to a hardware store, which could be a few kilometers away and nobody's got a car. Well, instead, these workers, they learn how to improvise on the job. I mean, these guys are experts at taking a torch, heating up a straight 3-inch pipe, flanging it, putting an elbow in it, and stretching the opening to 4 inches so it'll join up with a regular 4-inch tube. Now, to most people, that seems impossible, but I've seen them do it, and it isn't pretty. And that mangled piece of art they just made is not very strong either. And with all its new twists and turns, the inside, where the water and sewage is supposed to flow later. And what if someday you get a clog, and a plumber has to run a snake down there? Now that's a weak joint, and a place that can easily break. And nearly all those pipes are underground, or under cement. So if you sprout a leak there, how do you fix that? In other words, what I'm saying is don't let your contractor jury-rig any of your tubing, and don't let your electrician jury-rig any of his work, because they will if you don't keep your eye on them. So you have to keep all the supplies on hand, because if you don't, they're going to improvise. And somewhere down the line, it's going to come back to haunt you. And it happened to me, and in my case, on one of the houses I was building, the electrician put in circuit boxes made by Square D Company out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, no less. And Square D is a good, common enough brand, so that was okay with me. But after he did all the wiring and came back to put in the circuit breakers themselves, he found he was short 4 20-amp breakers. So instead of going back into town and picking up 4 Square D circuit breakers to fit that box, he had a bunch of old General Electric circuit breakers in his toolkit. And they didn't fit the Square D box, but he bent and hammered on them enough to make them fit. And when he put the final cover plate on the box, everything looked just fine, and no one knew the difference. But the problem was, about 3 months later, all the electrical outlets in 2 of the bedrooms simply dropped out completely. So we assumed somewhere in the wall there was a bad wire, which is a hell of a problem. And then, big surprise, a few hours later, suddenly all the wall outlets were back on again. And over the next few weeks, the problem was off and on. It was enough to drive me nuts. And finally, when an electrician did come in and he pulled the cover off the circuit box, those 4 General Electric circuit breakers stood out like a sore thumb, and their contacts to the main power strip were all loose. And that was the problem. So that's just one example of what you'll find down here if you don't keep your eyes on these guys. And it's not that they're doing this on purpose or that they're trying to save you money. As one contractor explained to me, he said before 5 or 10 years ago, when you went down to the hardware store or contractor supply, they had a limited supply of almost everything. And if you ran out of, let's say, 3-inch PVC elbows, you just couldn't come back in the next day or two and expect that they'd gotten a new shipment in. The problem was, they might not get another shipment for 3 months. And when that shipment did come in, there might be 3-inch PVC elbows, but more often than not, they'd be coming from a completely different supplier. And as you soon find out when you live in Latin America, a lot of these Latin American companies are not into standardization. In other words, a 3-inch PVC pipe from one company, let's say from Costa Rica, will be maybe 2 millimeters shy of 3 inches compared to a 3-inch PVC pipe that comes from a company, let's say in Honduras. So the plumber or contractor, when trying to connect these slightly dissimilar pipes, he's going to have to heat one of them, beat on it a while, and expand it just enough so that it slips over the other one until it makes a nice tight fit. But as Murphy's Law would have it, most of the time when you jury-rig something like that, you don't exactly get a perfect fit. And so now that union of the 2 pipes that the plumber just made, that's forever going to be the weak link in your system. And so you can imagine 5 or 10 years ago, any house that was built most likely had a lot of weak links in the system just like that. And that goes for the plumbing, the electrical, the sewage, you name it. So contractors learn to live with slightly dissimilar parts, and they learn to improvise. But nowadays, it's not necessary. You see, because in the last 5 or 10 years, the big supply houses have plenty of just about anything. And if they don't, they can make a few phone calls and send you off to another supply company that will. And if they don't have it, which is pretty rare, you can always get on the internet and order a part direct and get it in 2 or 3 days. But the hard part is getting your contractor to go with the program. And one good way to deal with the problem is to always make sure there's someone on hand with a car or a motorcycle so we can make a run to the hardware store when it's necessary. Okay, I will get back to that original email about garbage pickup and garbage disposal. And yes, in Latin America, they do have garbage disposal services. But most of the good, dependable ones are private. And you don't have to worry about finding one exactly, because somewhere along the way when you're building your house, a garbage truck is bound to drive past, and they're always looking for business. So they'll pull right up and try to make a weekly pickup deal with you. And the going rate for garbage pickup in Latin America is about $3 or $4 a month. And depending on what service you contract, they'll pick it up 1, 2, even 3 times a week. And what they'll do, of course, is drive it out to the local landfill, just like they have in the first world. Well, I take that back, because landfills in Latin America are not really like the ones in the first world. Because it seems that every landfill in Latin America somehow has attracted a group of families that live right on the piles of garbage in makeshift tin shacks. And every day, the whole family goes out, mother, father, kids, everyone, and they start picking through the garbage, looking for bottles and plastic, anything they can turn into the scrapyard for some cash. And I know that sounds disgusting and horribly depressing, but that's just a fact of life down here. So all you first world people up there who are donating a few bucks a month to Save the Children or Sally Struthers or whatever charitable organization, I think you should really forget about that and instead try to save these kids who are living in the garbage dumps. And there's some really good first world volunteers that come down here and try to help these people. So if you really want to save a kid, instead of sending your money to a feel-good organization that has a lot of publicity in the first world, just Google garbage dump kids in Latin America and send a few bucks to one of those organizations that pops up on the Google search. And speaking of garbage dumps, there's a lot of unofficial garbage dumps everywhere through Latin America. In fact, you'll be driving along the road and suddenly you'll run into a huge garbage mound. And people pulling up in their junky cars and pickup trucks, dumping out everything in them without any shame whatsoever, even though there's a big sign announcing a fine for anyone who's caught dumping. And if you pull over and watch what's happening, eventually a police car or 2 or 3 will drive right by and not even slow down. So the reason why these people throw their garbage there is because nobody enforces that law. I mean, why do you think they call it the third world?
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. And don't forget, you can email me about any question you have about Latin America. That's theexpatfiles@gmail.com. See you next time. Nos vemos.
South of the border.